Yes, Honest Actors is back with brand new episodes every Friday. To help me continue releasing new episodes without a sponsor, or to say thanks for your favourite old ones, click the support link in the episode description. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. It's a one-off, feeling generous, good deed for the day sort of thing. Think of it as bumping into me and buying me a drink. To find out more, click the support link. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show.
Yeah, mine's a large red.
I hate those guys.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yay!
Oh my God, you had a baby!
Hi, my name's Jonathan Harden and you're listening to the Honest Actors podcast, kind of. These are some lockdown special edition chats. Today I'm putting out 4 chats in total, 2 lockdown themed chats with people who've already had their kind of standard Honest Actors treatment on the podcast. And I've gone all the way back to 2015. I've got Denise Goff in this particular episode and I've got Tom Goodman-Hill in another that's also out today. But besides that, I've also got 2 brand new interviews with 2 people who've never been on the show before. More of that traditional Honest Actors kind of conversation that you're used to. And they're out today as well. So 4 things to listen to. This is Denise. It's my 3rd chat with Denise for this podcast. So massive thanks to her for her continued willingness to participate. For now though, all I have to say is it's good to be back. Thanks for listening. And here it is, Denise Goff. Enjoy. So,
Jonathan, that is just happy fucking days.
It's hilarious, isn't it? Who would have thunk?
You have a baby.
Who would have thunk? I know. Absolutely me.
I'm really happy. I'm really happy about that. And I love how casually you dropped it into your email. I was like, hang on.
No, but it's one of those things where we don't do, well, we do social, like we're on Twitter and stuff, but we're very rarely on Twitter. Like there's something on there that sometimes we look at, most of the time we don't. And I think without actually talking about it, we somehow came to a silent consensus that we didn't announce we were pregnant. We didn't put up a grainy scan. Yeah. I mean,
I think that's good.
Well, I think because we had, and I have never made any secret of this because I think it's an unnecessary taboo. We had not found that journey to having a family the easiest road.
I remember you told me,
and
that was the last thing we spoke about.
The end of the chat. So kind of in a way, we were like, do you know what? I know some people who go through real difficult times, and they can look at other people's scans and be genuinely happy for them. But I know that there were times whenever I would just be like, oh, would you stop posting pictures of your kid? Because, and I actually didn't, and this doesn't paint me a particularly nice light, but I actually did unfollow tons of people at one point. One person in particular who's a good friend, because they just kept on posting pictures of their kid and I couldn't really emotionally cope with it. And so we made a decision early on that, actually it wasn't even the decision, like I said, I just think we both felt it wasn't us. And so there's been no photographs on Facebook, there's been no announcements. So oddly, it's one of those brilliant things. It's like going back in time to the time whenever you met someone and they asked how you are and they genuinely didn't know. Like they hadn't been keeping tabs. The conversation didn't start with, I see you were eating out at that place.
So true.
You know, bullshit. It's so true. That you start these conversations. It's like, you know, what dramatists call in media res, you know, that kind of just halfway through a story. So I see you were doing, like, so it's been genuinely, what's the crack? Oh yeah, we've moved back to Belfast. We've a 8-month-old and it's like, people are like, whoa, like,
I love it. I love it because I'm not on any social media, so I don't know what anyone's doing anymore. So when I do get in touch with people or people get in touch with me, it feels old fashioned and I really like it.
Yeah, no, but
that's... Because you realize that friendships can, and relationships and all of that, they can sustain themselves over time without, like, when you get back, especially with actors, you can get back in touch and be like, oh my God, and then get all the news.
Yeah,
like,
get all the crack. See, that is something I used to hate, that you'd bump into someone that you hadn't seen in 10 years and you'd added them kind of blindly on Facebook. Like, so, and then all of a sudden when you met them, instead of it being this joyous kind of like, you know, there's a person in front of you to squeeze and, you know, and actually interact with, that you're like, oh my God, yeah. So we were thinking about going to New York. I see you were in New York. Like, just these random, like, it wasn't about the person. It was about the things they've been doing or the photographs they posted or this. And this, again, is probably relevant for the podcast. This kind of weird, like, you know, what do they call them? Avatar that people create. You know, this weird kind of scent, like, false version of themselves. So you have two false versions of people interacting with that narrative rather than going, how are you doing? In a way that actually is meaningful. So, yeah, so that with Cohen anyway, I think the first time probably people will know we have a baby who didn't know will be this podcast, because I had a chat about yesterday as well. So it's odd because it does change everything. But also it changes nothing. Like, both those things are great in their own way.
No, I just think it's fantastic. I just remember you telling me, I can't remember how the conversation started, but we spoke about it in Spotlight.
Yeah, I remember it.
And then, and I walked away and I thought, God, when people want to have a child and it's really hard. So I just was really hopeful for you always. So when I got that, it was such a lovely moment to get that in an email. And it's also
random,
to get
totally
it from
random.
You.
Totally random.
Yeah, but to get it from you, it's like, I think that's another thing too. When everything is being shared just to everyone, like, I felt like I got the information direct from you and Brona.
Yeah.
Well, you know, for me, it was my information that you get, like.
I've started referring to it as dropping the C-bomb, which is like just letting people know that Cohen exists. And it's so much of like a kind of weird, you know, reality warp that people go, so I'm what? Because I think when we told our families that Brona was pregnant, we traveled home to tell them. And I filmed everybody's reactions to it. My mum's is kind of the most amazing and heartbreaking, because we have a dog called Gracie and she keeps saying, Gracie's pregnant. And we're going, no, Brona's pregnant. She goes, Gracie's pregnant. And it's one of those things, like, I always have these moments in life where I go, if a director or writer wrote that and said that, you'd be like, that would never happen. But my mum couldn't actually translate Brona and me, who'd been together 20 years and not had kids, and I was 39 and Brona was 38. We're turning up at home to say, we're going to have a baby. And she just couldn't, you know what I mean?
She couldn't
compute it. And then when she did, obviously then it just went into hyperdrive of excitement. And hasn't really stopped. She's been living with us for the past 8 weeks, just because
it's so good, and you're home as well. Everyone must be so thrilled that you're back.
Look, it's great. It's great being, you know, isolated at home rather than isolated in London, because we were isolated in a very different way in London. Like, you know,
But also, I've been here since I was 15. So this is my home.
And you have a big. I always said to people, if you've trained at least, and people who've trained, I think sometimes disagree with this. But if you fell on really hard times, there are probably a handful of people that you went through a traumatic and joyous experience with that you could call upon, or you've been there since you were young, so you've made good friends. Brona and I arrived, for good or for bad, as a really well kind of connected couple. And so we were probably less engaged with other people. Which meant that without realizing it, we were actually isolating ourselves from what was going on. We didn't really care about going out for the night, you know, or turning up at opening nights or any of that carry on, which if one of us had been single, we probably would have been out, you know, just to see if we could cop off with someone, as much as kind of going, you know, better.
I also got sober here. Like, this is where I did my drinking, my using, my breakdown, my sobriety. So
your rise to stardom.
My rise to stardom. Yeah. My huge rise to stardom.
Huge rise.
And I have to tell you, isolating in an apartment that has like a balcony and big windows, and that has, like, if I was in that little flat I was in last year, this would be a very different experience, because that was like one room. So, yeah, I'm very aware. I'm in a really privileged position. You know?
I mean, we're the same, like, in that. had we been in London, we'd be our last flat in London. We did have a little bit of a garden, and the flat before that, we had a balcony. It's amazing how much a balcony, even when this wasn't happening, how much of a difference it makes. That you don't have to leave and walk to go and find somewhere to sit and have a cup of coffee on a bench. But I keep on thinking about, we friends in New York, you were talking about New York, and we friends in New York who live in apartment buildings and studio apartments on like the seventh floor. And as you say, you know, have to go down an elevator, and that's what they call lifts in America.
Walk through,
they
call that in America. A city.
So, but they can walk through a city. Yeah, they basically, you know,
to get to a park that is only one park. Like our park near here is bigger than Central Park. You know, it's a whole. You can walk. It's like being in the countryside a little bit further.
Is it the marshes? Is that what that is?
Yeah, Hackney Marshes and the wetlands and. Amazing. All along the canal. It's just incredible. We got lost the other day. Just to have space, you know, like I've had builders working on the roof for the past like 10 weeks. So there's scaffolding on my balcony, which cuts my sky in half. And they took some of the scaffolding away the other day. And I was like, oh my God, having space. It's like washing your eyeballs. So yeah, I feel really lucky. I just feel really
like washing your eyeballs.
But you know, when everything just feels too much and too tight and awful, and then you just have clear space outside, it just makes, I feel really
so
lucky.
Tell me then, like, what is lockdown been? What is it like? What's been the most difficult thing about it?
Well, weirdly, you know, so the initial 3 weeks, I was so productive. Like, I immediately got on to how do we create theatre in lockdown? How do I get involved in things that are going on creatively? So the first 3 weeks, I did three plays. You know, the Abbey Theatre did an amazing, like, immediately... I think the immediate thing for me was, what's going to happen to the theatre? Like, how? So it became about having conversations about what we're going to do about theatre for the next couple of years, because it looks like that's probably going to be the kind of length of time. But I was really impressed. The Abbey Theatre, our national theatre, immediately commissioned 50 writers, 50 actors, and made some work. And then Headlong did something. And then I did like the first ever live play online with the guys from Curtain Call. So the first 3 weeks I was constantly talking to people. And then I had, there's kind of a dip. It goes in waves, doesn't it? You know, I'm really, really aware of my privilege. So I have been feeling a lot of gratitude all the time. I've also been feeling like, you know, because I'm not on any social media or anything, I have really been connecting with people, but a small amount of people. Like, you realize who you're going to call in your lockdown, because I don't want to be in a state of fear about any of this, because it's happening. So I have to develop acceptance. And so there's sort of the people I tend to be surrounded by and reaching out to now are people that are kind of, you know, trying to be as positive as we can without kind of ignoring the fact that this is quite a massive thing. And then I read this amazing article by a woman. I'll send it to you after this. She's been through a lot of this stuff before, like quarantines. I think she was a hostage for a while. She talked about the stages of a quarantine, and she was like, you know, this productivity porn that goes on, you know, people saying, I'm doing this and I'm teaching my children 16 languages, and which just serves to make everybody else feel shit.
But it burnt itself out.
Yeah, and it's not sustainable. And then you shame yourself if you can't continue that level of productivity. So what's the point in that? So she talks about the first stage of quarantine is secure your space. So you secure the area you're in. So my flat, I've got food without panic buying. I've got toilet paper without panic buying. And you secure your tribe, the people that you're going to kind of work through this with, you know. And she said this beautiful line in it that was like, your beautiful, creative, intelligent, articulate mind is going to be waiting for you at the other side of this. So trying to, because in the initial stages, you know, I signed up for French classes. I was like, I bought a trampoline. I was having, I was doing HIIT sessions. I'm going to use this time.
The thing with that is you can do all those three things at the same time.
Exactly. Gently, man. Gently.
Just ease yourself in.
Just be gentle, because I realized then when I hit a wall, it was like, oh, I have to accept that we're living through a pandemic here. We're not all on holiday. You know, that's not what's happening. We haven't all just been told, you know, take a break. There's our cells are like trying to process the fact that the world is sort of forever changing at the moment. And we're all going through the thing, yes, together, but we're going through it in different ways. And so honoring the kind of, and then as a woman, also the hormone situation, going through, like getting in touch with all of that in when you're not doing anything else, you have to really get deep on how you're feeling at any given time and then honor that feeling. So I'm trying to take every day as it comes and not judge myself if all I can do is watch 6 episodes of The Real Housewives.
Jesus, Denise Goff, we all need more of you in our lives, I think. It's like, all of a sudden, I just breathe deeply for the first time in like 8 weeks. It's like, oh, it's going to be okay. Keep talking, Denise, keep talking. Just say some stuff.
Man. I mean, look, this is like Sunday morning. I've slept well. I feel, you know, I'm feeling good. I mean, I think, though, I have always tried to focus on, rather than what can I do as an actor in this time, it's like, what can I do as a person in this time to be really gentle to myself? And again, I go back to that thing of, if I was a kid and if there are days when I'm really scared, I read too much of the news and I think, oh God, the whole world is falling apart. How would I take care of a child who scared herself like that, you know? So I wouldn't force her to watch 17 hours of more like scary news or find theories about what all this is. And I would say maybe we'll go for a walk and like take it easy. And also going through this isolation on my own, you know, although I don't feel on my own, I feel like people are so much more willing to connect right now. Have you noticed everyone's answering their phone? And also not just their phone, people are answering FaceTime. I mean, if somebody had FaceTimed me 4 months ago without a plan to FaceTime, there's no way I'm answering that phone. It's a bit like when your house phone. Yeah. When your house phone used to ring, it's like, oh my God, who is calling the house phone? This is something bad has happened. But now with FaceTime, like now for me to, it's why when you said we would do this and you said you'd phone me and I was like, ugh, no, I'm not going to phone. Like we have to see each other. So now.
This has made it so much better. It's great.
Yeah. I can't use just the normal phone now. The idea of having just hearing somebody in my ear and not seeing their lovely faces. So the lockdown for me has been, somebody coined it the Corona coaster, didn't they? So, I try and go with how I feel at any given time. And like last week I was premenstrual and so I was sad and scared and, but you know, now I'm also able to, somebody, Michael Murphy, this amazing man, friend of mine, he recommended 2 books called Wild Power and Period Power. So I'm reading
Michael
them.
Murphy, the actor, director?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Because he has read these books when he was much younger and he knew more about my menstrual cycle than I did. So I'm using this time to learn about all the ways in which.
What a chat up line that is. Have you read Period Power?
Okay, it's so impressive to talk to a man, like he's a dear friend of mine, but to talk to a man who knows this stuff so that I understand like actually the power of my body, what's going on in my body at the different weeks in lockdown. So the more I honor that as well, that's helpful.
So you don't feel kind of isolated in some ways, but I guess one of the things that certainly psychologists talk about now is that kind of human contact,
And that, yeah. I haven't been touched in 2 months.
In normal circumstances, that's one of the things that people worry about with the elderly is that like a hand massage, you know, that people say, you know, visiting people and older people give them a hand massage. And one of the reasons Mum moved in with us, because I was like, she will not cope with not being able to hug people. I just wonder, there aren't a lot of people, I guess, isolating alone. I think the majority are isolating with family or in shared houses. How has that affected you, do you think?
That is kind of weird. And on my lower days, I do feel like, oh God, I socially distance walk with my friend Kyle, and he's like a big bear of a man. And sometimes I look at him and I just think, I would fit really perfectly in your arm now. and I can't. So I think that, I don't know, it's easier maybe for me than it would be for somebody who's elderly and used to, like, to be honest with you, at the beginning I was like, it's quite nice actually not being expected to touch everybody all the time. And also, isn't it kind of amazing that in the world we were having all these conversations about consent? You know, that was a major like zeitgeist thing, wasn't it? And now in this new situation we're in, you have to ask consent. So I'm going to be like, the other night I was thinking, who's going to be my first hug? Like, what's that? Who's it going to be? I can't waste it. And I was thinking, oh, I wish I was near my niece and my nephews, because that's who I'd love to hug now. And then yesterday was my dad's 80th birthday. And we had a Zoom quiz for him last night, and we sent him, my sister, arranged it all. It was amazing. Like, we made these hugs out of like paper, or I made mine out of a bed sheet. So you lie on it and draw a hug. And then she decorated the garden with all these hugs from all of us, because I think that's like, for him, that's what he says is really, really difficult, is not hugging. I mean, he has my mum there, but
they don't like each other. So
just the ability. Yeah, they don't like each other. but just the ability to, the choice about whether I want to do it or not is great. But I was talking to a friend of mine who's really famous, and she was like, I was like, it's kind of good for you though, because now people can't just grab you anymore. So like, and people have to ask if they take a picture. And so there's going to be, you know, there'll be good things that come out of it.
Definitely.
I'm trying to see the positives on all of it, but yeah, I'm looking forward to hugging and dating and doing all of that stuff.
Well, it's open submission season now. You've just announced it.
It's going to be a lot of inappropriate touching.
Yeah, it is kind of, I mean, it's such a weird one. This is a defining moment in our history and also in our development. It's going to be one of those things that there's PTSD from. That, you know, talk
about the mental health tsunami after this is going to be like, I have two sisters who work on the front line, and a brother-in-law, and they're handling it really, really well. But I think having to witness all of that all the time, like I watched a clip of a documentary the other day of a nurse who was taken off her ventilator and survived. And then she walks through the hospital and they're all clapping for her. And I was like, what is it doing to, like, what must it be doing to those amazing people who are witnessing it? So yes.
Yeah, they're on the corona, they're on the corona coaster. They, you know, absolutely.
But also, don't you think too, though, like in terms of, we were starting to have much louder conversations about mental health and PTSD and complex PTSD and all of that. And now those things will, no, as a result of this thing that has come along, those things cannot be ignored. Like, it won't be as easy to shove that stuff under the rug anymore. We're going to have to. And the moments that we're having to witness of that connection, so the little babies touching their grandparents' hands through the windows and stuff, what it does force us to do, as much as it's horrific that we can't all touch and hug and do, it is forcing us to stand back and witness how important connection is, how important touch is. And I think we were in a state of, like, we weren't even using our phones to do the thing that they were designed to do, which is connect us. We were using them sort of to disconnect. Like you talked about the avatar that we that is created in social media and all of that stuff. We were using them to take a step back from who we really are, were. And now, I don't know, there's something about this that if it's dealt with in, I don't know, in a holistic way as we move through it, that we can take what we've learned, which I feel certainly like the importance of connection and everything, we can take that back out there when
oh,
we
yeah.
go
There's
back
shit
out.
Tons of stuff that we were taking for yeah. granted. Like, I was taking peppers for granted. I was taking fucking toilet roll for granted. I was taking the ability to exercise on my own whenever I wanted, yeah. wherever I wanted for granted, to be able to drive to the coast for granted, the sea for granted. Like, the list yeah. goes on. I was just taking everything that is given to me on a plate day in, day out.
Yeah,
as
totally.
As a given, as a thing that would always be there. So
yeah. only- And now we're being forced to look into the things that we need, really need.
Yeah.
What is it that is really most important to me? You know, and to stop, there was, I don't know, I think I was talking to young actors the other day and I did this talk and they all wanted to know, like, how do you audition? How do you self-tape? And I realized I'm so bad at talking about stuff like that. I have no idea. I can't help you with that. And
yeah, you're awful at auditions.
I guess. but I don't know the formula, and I don't think that that's the important thing to think about. I think the important thing right now anyway is to get in touch with who we are as people, not as actors. Like, who am I as a person? Acting, for example, is the study of human behavior. So I don't think you should study other actors. You just study yourself and human beings. Forget about studying people who've done the acting bit. I want to study people. And at the moment, there's no better, like, study than how am I in isolation? Like, how am I when everything is taken away?
Mm.
Do I still show up for myself? Do I still believe that I'm worthy? Do I still think, like...
Have you got angry?
Yeah. So I think everything that happens is either like, so I'm either looking at things from a place of fear or a place of love. And there's like, when I'm in fear, it manifests itself in ways that I think are what's going on, but actually they're just a symptom of fear. So if I'm getting violently angry, and I can see, you see it all the time around us, like people are at their edge at the moment and everybody is coming at this thing from their level of self-awareness. Like, so if I'm out there and things are like, I've had days where I've gone out before the lockdown started. I mean, who knows what the fucking lockdown is over here now, but when everyone's in the park and nobody is wearing a mask in the hardware shop and the guy who's been in the hardware shop for years is scared because people are like, I get angry, but then I realize it's my fear. I'm coming from fear. What I'm trying to work on all the time at the moment is acceptance that things are the way they are. And the only thing I can really do to be responsible is to be as gentle and kind to myself as possible, because it's going to trigger all sorts of things here. You know, not having control for human beings, I think, is really terrifying. And so it's like when you listen to like those really full-on conspiracy theorists, they're trying to put control, like to control a narrative so that they don't feel so scared. I think everyone is just, and also everyone is like, I had a meeting online and it was Zoom bombed. Have you ever had that?
Yeah, I heard about it. Yeah, I heard about a swim event that was Zoom bombed with some pornography. Actually, it was on the news.
It's pretty gross. It's pretty scary. Like the sound that you hear is like a horror movie, you know. And then there's somebody writing across the screen. And I was in a women's group, and you know, calling us whores and all. And it was terrifying. And so we all left the group and then made it more secure and came back. And now we have this amazing group still. But I realized even. But even those people, Jonathan, are doing the best they fucking can with what's available to them emotionally.
That's an amazing way to view that. That's a very generous take on that.
But it doesn't mean that I approve of what they're doing.
And I don't disagree with you. Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
But I just think what makes a person, like, thank God I'm not a person that when crisis hits, I have to go into my computer and terrorize people. Mm. And so if I can just get really clear in this time about how, so witnessing, like be in witness to myself. So, oh my God, I went out the other day and I was really angry that somebody was picking the wildflowers in our wildflower meadow in London Fields. I was kind of, oh my God, what are they doing? And yeah. So I had to stand back and go, okay, so what's going on here? And underneath all of that was, I'm just really scared. And I'm scared that this is going to be how it is forever. And it's okay to have moments of fear yeah. through a pandemic, right?
It's about taking notice, though, isn't it? Like all these things, it's one of those things, I think it's one of the things that make me realize that I'm supposed to be acting, is that I can't go through any traumatic experience without in the moment going, oh, right, this is interesting how I'm reacting to this. Like there's something yeah, about taking, you know?
But that's the thing, the study of human behavior, you know, but if I'm only studying other people's human behavior, I'm missing the point. Like as an actor, for me, the most important yeah. human that I can study is myself, so that I'm not leaking my stuff onto characters that I play, you know? So if I don't know myself.
Leaking my stuff, what an image.
Oh no, sorry, that was kind of gross. Way more eloquent than this. But I bring my fear to a character that yeah. maybe doesn't need that fear. Yeah. And you see it sometimes, don't you? People who are kind of so intense in their roles, and you think, I don't know if this is you or the character. I would really like to know that you are able to like separate yourself. The only way I can separate myself from the kind of very intense women that I play is to know what's mine and what's theirs. And so this whole isolation time is a real opportunity for me anyway to really get in touch with. So like last week, for example, when I was really scared and really upset and so emotional, if I didn't know that I was like in the fourth week of my menstrual cycle, I would have thought, oh my God, what's wrong with me? There's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong. It's just, how am I going to support myself through all of these different feelings that I have? I have to be so careful not
to
shame myself.
This 8 weeks has changed you in any way? Like, I mean, that's a big question, and also implies that I'm looking for an affirmative, and I'm really not. I guess the thing is, I hope it has changed me. I'm not sure that, you know, 8 weeks after it's finished, I won't have just gone back to being the person that I was before all this. You know, like, do you think this has changed you permanently?
I'm sort of okay with the person I was before this. Like, I did a lot of work. I do
really?
A lot of work on myself. Oh. Yeah, you are a bitch. But like what's been really affirmed to me in this time is that because if you knew me 13 years ago, I didn't know how to look after myself. Yeah. I really didn't. I shamed myself constantly. I kind of hated myself. And so in this lockdown,
what year was it I met you was 2011, I want to say.
My God, that's nearly 10 years ago.
It's mental, isn't it?
Wow.
Bruno and I yesterday on a walk realized that we went to university 20 years ago, and it fucking terrifies.
Yeah, I know. I can't even.
Fuck.
Now, like,
what
do I go to? I did a job recently with an actress who's a little bit older than me, and we got on set, and I was like, wow, isn't it funny? We're not the really young ones on set anymore. And she turned to me and she went, yeah, well, how would you feel if you looked over and you're supposed to be those six girls' mother? And there's six of the most beautiful, like 20-year-old blonde women. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, you're playing their mom, all of them. It was like, wow, what happened? But I'm really enjoying getting older in terms of like getting to know myself better. It's great.
Yeah.
But to go back to what you said, like this lockdown period, what it has shown me particularly is the progress. So it's always progress, not perfection for me. So none of us, the idea of like perfectionism, I think really can kill people. It can kill their spirits first, but it can actually kill people physically. And I used to have a real problem with it. And now what I'm really happy about in this isolation is that actually the work that I have done over the last 13 years on myself has proven itself to me. It has proven itself that during this time of crisis, yes, I have kind of difficulties within it, but the years of therapy, of self-examination, of self-actualization, all of that, it, in this time, it has shown me I'm so much better at taking care of myself. And I think when you're able to take care of yourself, really gentle, kind care of yourself, things like this are somewhat easier, right? If I believe myself, yeah. It's why I don't denigrate the woman I was before this lockdown. I think I was trying to do that anyway, but I was maybe doing it in a more disconnected way. And I think I still, you know, maybe I was, you know, looking to work to kind of distract me and all of that. But actually now, sitting with myself, I'm like, yeah, no, I'm okay. I'm all right.
Just to give me a little bit of hope, do you still find yourself being unkind to yourself occasionally?
Occasionally, yeah, but yes. I catch it much quicker. And I have people in my life that I bring it to. Listen, it's the critical parent. It's in all of us. It's in everyone.
Because that's my thing is like that. Yeah, I lose my shit at myself more. In fact, I don't lose my shit at other people very much at all. That they know about.
Which is interesting, isn't it?
That they know about. But I lose my, you know.
That's interesting that you think, like, you know, I won't lose my shit at them, but it's okay to lose my shit at myself. Like putting myself at a little bit lower than everybody else. I don't see how that's, like, I can lose my shit when, you know, it's in my nature as somebody who grew up the way that I did, and especially with the teenage years that I had, that when I feel attacked, I can get very defensive. And that has looked like various stages of rage over the years, but I have learned to kind of hone it, because I think you lose your power when you lose your shit at people. So I do it much, much less than I ever have, but I don't hang myself out. I'm not a doormat, you know?
Yeah. There've been a few of those moments over the course of this where I've surprised myself. Like I was quite cross as my mom at one point, and I was like, what the fuck was that? You know,
but we're in a pandemic. We're in, like, we are all operating at our edge. I'm not saying that doesn't happen in normal times too, but right now it's not all like acts of kindness going on out there. People are fucking terrified and are trying to get control wherever they can. And sometimes losing your shit is the way you feel like you're doing it. And then afterwards, but this is awareness, isn't it? Brona comes back and she's like, I didn't feel good about that. No. You know, so there's the lesson, isn't it? There are people that are just out there screaming at each other and have no idea what that's doing to themselves. They have no idea the adrenaline and cortisol that is rushing through their bodies that then they have to try and sustain. Like, it's really, it's self-awareness, you know? And also, I have a trick that I developed years ago for this critical. So I imagine to myself, so in myself, there's like a prosecution lawyer, barrister, she's fucking amazing, but she's really vicious, and I am the accused, and so she can destroy me in my head, and she speaks in my voice, so it's really confusing. So I think that what she's saying is true, because it must be true because I'm saying it, you know. So she lays out the case, and in the case I'm always
guilty,
guilty. But then after years of, like, I kind of developed it with a therapist where I was so then it was pointed out to me that maybe if I just look over to the other side, I have found that there's a defense lawyer sitting there. She also is amazing at her job. So good. Speaks in my voice, but way kinder, way more. So she's on my side. And it's like she says to me, I've been here the whole time on retainer, but you just don't let me speak. So can you let me now make a case for you against the prosecution? And so now I have this very schizophrenic situation going on in my head. But when that critical prosecution is going fucking nuts at me, destroying me, I go, okay, I hired you. You're there because I let you in and I pay you really well. So, okay, I've heard your side, but now I'm just going to ask this side what she thinks. And so at least I give myself a moment of going, I can decide.
I really want to see the courtroom. I want to, and there's like a judge that's also you.
Pretty good.
That kind of falls asleep sometimes. And there's a jury that is just loads of you. And there's like like reporters at the back that are you. They're all shit hot at their jobs, by the way.
The girls on the bus as well.
They're all shit hot at their jobs. I have another one that's a girl.
But if you think about it, you wake, so you're going to sleep at night and that voice, or you wake up first thing in the morning and that voice is going nuts. And I choose to believe it in the morning. So I start my day going, yeah, she's right. I am a piece of shit. I'm never going to work again. Nobody loves me. I haven't got a boyfriend or I haven't got a girlfriend. There's all of these, there's all of this information that she has that she uses against me. And then I bring that into my day. So I go out into my day, inviting to me all of these experiences that affirm what this fucking prosecution lawyer is saying. So if I just give myself a moment in the morning to compassionately inquire into what that voice is saying. So I still let the voice happen, but I say, okay, I hear you, but I'm just going to offer up this piece of information about me. It just gives you a kind of, I know it sounds like there's a lot of voices, but it just gives me a way to be on my own team. You know, why does the loudest, just because she's the loudest, it doesn't necessarily mean she's telling the truth. She's just doing her job.
It makes total sense.
And the girls on the bus are all just the versions. I'm driving a bus and I look back and there's all these versions of me. And they're all trying to go nuts. So there's the perfectionist, the smoker, the drinker, the drug taker, the
candlestick maker.
There's loads of them. And at any given time, like, my job is to try and be kind enough to all of them so that I don't have to go crazy on any one of those various addictions that I can dance with. And so I have to be gentle. I think gentleness is just the key for me to everything. So, if I can just be gentle with myself, I have a chance.
If you haven't been dancing with any of those things during lockdown, what have you been dancing with? What have been the things that kind of...
Well, I have been actually dancing, which has been amazing. So I have a trampoline now, so I use that sometimes. I've been reading, but not... I'm reading about 10 different books and I can only handle about 2 pages of each of them at any given time because apparently...
You're preaching to the choir.
But the journalist I was talking about at the beginning, she said that that is a key thing to remember in lockdown, how your brain is working differently because your brain is trying to process what's going on globally and this massive pandemic.
But
so to ask
but
it
you're
to
not
then
evolved
slowly,
to be able to cope with.
Exactly. So gently, like initially I was like, why can't I read? I can't read anything. And then I was like, oh, I can read 2 pages. So again, gentle. So I do that. I work out, but not in the fourth week of my menstrual cycle because I'm too tired. So really gently, like, although this trainer that I'm working
with. What are you benching?
I have a kettlebell. I have a kettlebell that's like 8. I'm actually quite fit now.
You were always fit. I'm actually quite fit now. Yeah, because if you'd ask me, what's one word to describe Denise Goff? I'd have said really unfit. But you were lithe. You were lithe.
Yeah, yoga. But I was really unhealthy.
Yeah, but you did lots of yoga. We went for dinner and you always ate healthily. I remember.
And then I'd go back to my hotel room and like eat 7 bags of Percy Pigs.
Me too. My was tato was my thing.
Of course. When in Ireland, you have to eat tato. So I do. I stay in touch with people. I have like wellness groups that I go to online with some fabulous women. And what else do? I do my walks. I was trying to learn French, but I found it too difficult, so I had to stop doing that.
Bien sûr.
Trying to do a class online was just a bit, my brain just couldn't do it, so I'll come back to that at some point. A lot of cleaning, cooking. Again, this journalist was saying you get quite primitive in lockdown. It's all quite like the simple, I can do the simple basic. Like cleaning makes me, having my flat really clean is really satisfying to me.
Tidying the nest.
Yeah. And then I had dinner on Zoom last night with my nephews and niece and my sister and her husband.
Brilliant.
Yeah, just stuff like that. Just what everybody's doing, I guess, you know. I
do miss, to have like, a session on Zoom, like an Irish music session. But unhelpfully, it's what's it called? Let me just see what it's called. It's something like persistent background noise filter filters out Tim Whistle, which I think is absolutely brilliant.
Persistent. Oh my God, my aunt would be furious because she has learned Tim Whistle in lockdown.
So my sister-in-law and her partner were like giving the Dixie, and it looked amazing, but total silence, absolute silence. Good.
Well, we had to have, because there's 11 of us in, like, just brothers and sisters in my family, and my dad and my aunts and nephews and nieces, and we did the Zoom quiz last night, and it was organized fun. Like, we all had to be muted, and you were only allowed to speak when you were unmuted. Because you just can't. You can't put a family like ours on Zoom and not expect that we're going to, like, there'll be somebody will be fighting at some point, or whooping, or the noise is too much, and... So I do quizzes once every 2 weeks. My friend, she organizes a quiz. I'm not particularly good at them, but it's quite fun.
What's your specialist subject? Like, what's, if you're playing Trivial Pursuits? Yeah, so it is just like entertainment, like, you know, arts.
Yeah, it's sort of, I mean, we had to do like a section, five questions each. Mine are quite good, actually. I found some good acting questions.
Right.
Give us
an acting question. Go.
Who was the very prolific English actor who won an EGOT? Was it Ralph Richardson, Laurence Olivier, John Gielgud, or Peter O'Toole?
Give me the list again.
Ralph Richardson, Laurence Olivier, John Gielgud, Peter O'Toole.
Ralph Richardson every time.
John Gielgud.
See the way you couldn't remember John Gielgud, and I was like, "You don't." That's classic giveaway. If it's multiple choice, you couldn't remember his name. I was like, "It's definitely not him." You're good.
Yeah.
You're damn good.
He won
good.
A Grammy for speaking Shakespeare. Imagine that.
That's
for
amazing.
His spoken word album of Shakespeare.
That's amazing.
I know, right? And then another one was, who were the two actors on the boat with Natalie Wood when she drowned?
Oh, no idea.
Christopher Walken and Robert Wagner. Actually, my brother did a really good one last night. He was like, who's the only famous person to win a Nobel Prize and an Oscar? And I answered Bob Dylan, but it was George Bernard Shaw. But Bob Dylan was offered a Nobel Prize and he turned it down. So... that's the kind of sneakiness that my brothers and sisters.
I like that, because I was going to do one and then I thought, I'm not going to fucking sit for an hour. We just, like, the amazing thing about all this is that it's going by so quickly. It gets to Thursday night, we go out the front door and we're like, where the fuck did this week go? Like, where?
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? But also, do you know what I'm enjoying too, is like when I do go out in Hackney, you start bumping into the same people. You realize the community is all at home now.
Yep.
So we've gone very local, like people who would usually be away a lot. Well, I'd usually be away a lot. And actually our community is great. And also I can see the city from my balcony and it's so clear. Like I can see the window.
You didn't realize the pollution was there, I guess.
No idea. Yeah. In the same way as I do now, I can see how shiny the buildings are in Canary Wharf.
Somebody sent me this tweet yesterday, so I didn't see it myself. It's a guy called Matt Haig. Yes, lockdown poses its own mental health challenges, but can we please stop pretending our former world of long working hours, stressful commutes, hectic crowds, shopping centres, infinite choice, mass consumerism, air pollution, and 24/7 everything was a mental health utopia?
Exactly.
And I was yeah, totally. So this is just a different, yes, there are different challenges, very different.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. And now this is giving us time to reflect on all of that. And we will take, I'm hoping we will take the issue of mental health far more seriously. And we'll take all the other things that are coming up, consent, there's so many pollution. Like, I mean, yes, it's at the moment we're all talking about it, but that things have to change. Like things do now, understanding, like a friend of mine was saying, God, I can't believe I ever worked in an office. Why have we got all these offices? We don't need them.
The other thing that people have realized, though, is that people actually miss their offices. Now, what they miss really is space, headspace.
Yeah.
But they also miss people, colleagues.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And equally for us as well, you know, the Abbey thing, as great as it is, like, you get the act, but you don't get the act with other people. And that's what it's all about.
If the theatre is going all online, I'm in serious trouble because, like, I want people standing up and clapping for me. I don't want to close my laptop screen and be in my kitchen after I play Medea.
No, you know? No, absolutely not.
No, we'll get back at some point to a different kind of version of what all that is, because I think that we will take into consideration how much we need each other, you know?
Mm.
I hope so anyway.
Well, Peter Hall said years ago, we were doing a very bad version of Julius Caesar when I was at college, and Peter Hall came along. Can't explain why this happened, but he came along to rehearsals, and then we... at an evening opening, official opening of a theatre space, we performed a section. The most embarrassing point of my career, now looking back, because we were all uniformly terrible, but he had to give a keynote address, I guess, or a kind of speech, and he was talking about the relevance of theatre. And this is 2000, right, January 2000, and he was talking about the relevance of theatre. And at that point, everybody was going, theatre's becoming increasingly irrelevant. And, you know, same way as the National's going to struggle because its audience group are the people most at risk. You know, the people isolating for longest are the people who normally go and sit in Littleton. And that's a big problem, right? But he was saying, as we move towards a society where opportunities for communal activity decrease, that people will increasingly turn to communal pursuits like the theatre.
Like
cinema, because Netflix won't kill cinemas. No more than lockdown online theatre will kill that need to go and sit in an auditorium and experience something as a community and applaud Denise Goff as a community. If her Medea is any good, you know.
Yeah, but I think it makes that it's bringing all of this to light. Like, I've always thought when I did that, the People, Places and Things play, what I was so aware of on stage every night was how you cannot substitute. Like, there is no substitute. It is the last bastion of connection. And I've thought about it so much over lockdown in terms of, like, other art forms, the artists themselves don't really have to be there for you to, like, connect with their art. But in terms of, but theatre, and also my friend who's a musician, like, you have to be there. And I think people, whether they like it or not, they crave that. They just do. And when we did that live piece online recently, we did a Tom Stoppard play, and we had a stage manager, and she, like, opened the house on Zoom. And it was such a weird feeling because I could feel these people. Yeah, I mean, we couldn't see them, but I could feel that feeling of when you're told the house is open and the people are coming in. Like, and I think that these Zoom things work when everybody comes to the virtual room with a desire to connect, because it's energy, right? So, but there is no substitute for, like, being in a theater space all together, making the art happen. Like, theater only happens with an audience.
Yep.
You know, that's why they're the most important thing. Yep.
Peter Brooke,
like, I was saying to my friend, my friend is a singer, and I saw her last gig in Greece, and we were talking about how, like, she's like, I don't know when we'll tour again or do anything. And I was like, but imagine that first night. Imagine when it's safe for us to go into a space like that. Just imagine. I swear to God, I better be up on the stage in one of the first performances. Imagine how amazing it's going to feel when we all sit together again. Oh my God.
As long as people don't get too excited and go back to the American thing of anytime anybody they recognize walk on stage, they get a round of applause. Like, that does my absolute brain in.
Yeah, me too. I think that should be stopped. It should be stopped. But I honestly, I do. I am, Yeah, that will be that amazing. First leg. Can you imagine?
That will be amazing. Listen, great. I've taken enough of your Sunday morning. I'm sure you want to go and watch Sunday Brunch on Channel 4.
Sure I do.
it's a hollow promise now that they're not in a studio, I have to say. It's so difficult.
But it'll be interesting because even like people who think that shows are about them and all of that, they're now realizing,
the audience is kind of important.
If I don't have an audience. So I think I'm hoping that people's egos are all getting leveled out now too, you know, and realizing maybe I kind of, and you know what the biggest thing for me though is our value system on where we place our heroes is changed forever, I hope. Like, I stand in the street and clap for the bin men as they pass because, like, we spent a long time, and I think Instagram and social media did this, where we kind of deify people who get to do jobs that they love and get paid a lot of money for them, mm-hmm. and we then idolize them. And now what I'm hoping is we realize, and also in the wake of Brexit, you know, we're now witnessing a country that is entirely held up by immigration. It is entirely all the people that are doing the jobs that we need to keep our system intact as we go through this are all from other places. I mean, it is quite incredible to me, the kind of lesson that we are learning in this. And then, of course, NHS. The very people that were clapping when the nurses didn't get their pay rises. Like, now to think they're the heroes, the celebrities. We went through an age, like, the celebrity goes through different ages, doesn't it? We went through there's the movie star age, the model age, the athlete's age. And now finally we're at the age that it really is, which is the people who do jobs that do save lives, you know?
That matter, yeah.
And it really matter. I hope they have money thrown at them now after this. But anyway, I
love you, Denise Goff.
Coffee. I love you too, Jonathan.
I very much love you. And I love to talk to you. And you have put a spring in my step today, I have to say. So I'm going off into Sunday feeling like, yeah, I can be kinder to myself.
Yeah, you deserve to be kinder to yourself.
Thank you, Denise. So, like I said at the top of this is the beginning of something, I hope, perhaps a series 4, who knows. Definitely some more lockdown themed chats. I have about half a dozen lined up over the next few weeks. I haven't had those chats yet. I'm going to try and have them in the few days before they go out so they're as live as possible. I'm responding to the ever evolving situation around us at the moment, but also hopefully some more brand new chats like the ones that have gone before. So, if you're interested, there are another 3 pieces of audio up today. Tom Goodman Hill's Lockdown Chat, plus brand new interviews with Tara Lynn O'Neill and Jam Westman. So, keep on listening. Thanks for your continued support. And I'll be back again next Friday, fingers crossed, all being well, with a little bit more of the same. Thanks for listening. Speak to you soon.
Also, just to finish too, though, now that you have now that you have a child, you'll see how you speak to him. That's how you need to speak to yourself too. Kind, kind, kind. He's amazing. He's brilliant. He's wonderful. That's what we all are. If we look. I can jump that high. Oh my God, I'm exhausted. No, I did it because it's really good for your arse and it makes you feel like a kid. Like, you can't bounce on a trampoline and be in a bad mood. You just can't, actually. Like, if you're going to be a kid, kids love trampolines.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.